Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Michael S.
Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a 100-pounder, and it's amazing to be here and to celebrate 4 years of OA sobriety. You know, I got my 30, 60, 90-day chips, I think, at this meeting, and my 1 year and 2 years. So I think every year I've gotten a candle here, too. So it's been really, it's really special to be back and to get to share where I'm at now. I'm showing my pictures for those who can't see on the recording. This is me at 340 pounds. This photo is me right before the pandemic, March 13th, 2020. And I was at pretty much at my top weight. I wasn't really weighing at that point, but I was 340, you know, and that was my number. What's amazing is I hear that number a lot. And, you know, you hear your story, but I hear that and I think, oh, I'm in the right place. And I always tune in extra special when that's my number, and also when it's not, because even what I've learned is, and then I'll tell my story, when I came in, I was like, the people in my first meeting were thin. They were all thin, and they didn't share my story on the surface. And there were some anorexics and all this, and it's all the same story, you know? It's all the same. Sometimes my story is more direct. I kind of was thinking when I first came in, I'm like, well, where are all the big people? Like, where are they? And, you know, it's interesting because now here I am 4 years later, I've lost 165 pounds. And you wouldn't look at me and necessarily think that I was 340 at some point. So anyways, I will share what it was like. You know, life was just not always working. It was not smooth. It wasn't smooth sailing, you know. I had a great life from the outside. You know, I worked at the top companies. I had the top jobs. I was getting accolades in some places. You know, from the outside, things looked pretty good, except for my physical, right? And I think I grew up with this thing. I grew up with this compulsion, you know. When I was a kid, I remember I would stay late at school. My parents were divorced. My father would see me once a week or once every other week, and he'd come pick me up from school. And he was the last person to pick me up. Like, I was the last one to be picked up. It was me and a couple other kids. And he'd bring fast food. And that was like, it first of all made me feel like, oh, he loves me, you know? He loves me, and also I get to be the cool guy with the fast food, right? And I'd go some days after school, I'd go to my grandmother's house, and I would have already had a lunch. It was 2 o'clock, and she would feed me another lunch. You know, I come from a culture where we're big around food, and she would feed me another lunch, and that was just totally normal. It wasn't like, oh, he's eating another. It was just like, yeah, have this full plate of food. And then I'd have dinner, of course, and I just didn't think about it. I didn't think of it as a compulsion. I just was bored out of my mind at my grandma's house. She was watching One Life to Live, and I was like, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll take some more fruit. I'll take some more rice. I'll take some more more, right? And it's really interesting because now I have perspective, and now I go to my grandmother's house years later in recovery, and there's silences sometimes, and she fills the silences to this day with, have a piece of this, have a fruit, and now I just say no thank you. But she wants me to eat, and that's just her way of showing love, you know? But that was love for me, you know? My mother would shame me around food. You know, one example of probably thousands was, you know, we'd sit and there'd be something on the table and I'd be helping myself and she'd say, leave some for other people, you know? And I felt so ashamed. And she would cook healthy food and broccoli and all this. And my dad was like, he was asleep all the time. And I would have fast food and I would have whatever I wanted. The ice cream in the freezer. I would stay up till 2 o'clock watching, 2 in the morning, watching comedy, watching whatever on TV. And so it was this two poles, right? She was like, very healthy, don't eat bad. And I would take it out. You know, the sort of like simple psychology that I can put is like, well, she was restricting me, so I took it up to the other edge. I don't know whether that's true, right? But what I know is food was comfort. And I didn't have any idea that food could be an addiction, you know? I went to college, and looking back at the photos of me as a kid, I was not a big kid, but I always, my whole life, felt fat. And I was chubbier than other kids, for sure. I was 13 in Weight Watchers, you know, I was the youngest kid there. I was always on diets in my life, and family members would, the first thing they comment at a family party, you gained weight or you lost weight. And so I always felt fat. But I look back at my freshman year college photos, and I was thin. But I felt fat, right? So it was like, okay, how does that make sense? Went through college and slowly gained weight. And by the time I finished college, I could not fit into the clothes that I had anymore. So I had to buy new clothes. I still was, you know, I don't know what, I was in the 200s at that point. But I remember my graduation, I had to wear the gown. And I had to wear something under the gown because obviously, you know, there's something under it. And nothing fit. The shirts were sort of bursting at the seams a little bit. And I was like, oh, fuck. You know, excuse my language. I said, you know, I'm screwed, you know. And more than the body and more than the food and more than the weight, it was just like how I showed up in the world was like I was wearing a mask, you know. I was really fun and funny. And I like to think I'm still fun and still funny. But it was different because I'd walk into the room and I wanted everyone to love me. And I didn't know that at the time, but now I can see that clearly. And I was the funny fat guy, you know. I was the one that's charming you and ba ba ba. And unless things aren't going my way, you know, or unless it's behind the scenes. My disease took me to, I would Uber to work every day in New York City. And I didn't have the money to, I mean, it wasn't like I was rolling in money. But I was Ubering every single day. That made me feel fabulous, you know. Here's the picture, right? And then I'll get to what happened. My apartment, I lived in a one-bedroom, a studio apartment in New York. I had water bottles on the floor. I had fast food and trash and takeout containers. I'd spend $60 on takeout. Whatever I didn't eat, I'd stick it in the fridge because that was the trash can. I didn't want to take the food down to the hallway. And I share this all the time, but just picture what it was like. Didn't want to take the food out. The fridge would smell so bad at some point that I'd be forced to take it out, right? I did not see this as a problem, people. I did not see this as a problem. The ceiling in my bathroom caved in. It literally fell, okay? There was a giant hole in the bathroom ceiling. And I did not call the landlord immediately. And ultimately, I did take some action, and he came and he put a trash bag on top of it. He's like, yeah, they said we're going to fix it at some point. But I never pushed. I never followed up. And that was until I moved out of that apartment, there was a trash bag over the hole in the ceiling. And that's kind of a metaphor, right? Because here I am from the outside. I'm Ubering to work, showing up about an hour and a half late. I had these reviews, and they would call me out on that in the reviews. And they'd say, you were late. And I'd say, I can show you the Uber receipts, okay? But that was, I was lying. I was fibbing. It was always your fault. It was your fault. don't you see her? She's late every day. Where was her? Where was Jeannie today? You know, where was she? Jeannie was there. Jeannie was in a meeting, probably. You know, names have been changed for the protection of Jeannie. So I really, And I would just sweat. I'd go to places, I'd sweat. It just wasn't working, right? Oh, and then, this is what I want to say about the Ubers, just quickly. I'd get in the car, and it was the same route every day, okay? At some point, guys, I just want to say this, I lived several blocks, five blocks, six blocks, and I'd still Uber, okay? And it was the same amount of time to Uber than it was to walk. So I figured out, and if he got a red light, it would take longer. So he had to take my exact route because I timed it out, and then it would be like worth it, right? This sounds crazy. And the guy didn't take the route, and I said, "What are you doing? Are you crazy? Like, you missed the turn. Now we have to go. It's going to take an extra, 1 minute?" But in my mind, I'm like, that was my insanity. And this is just small examples to show you I was the life of the party, unless it wasn't going my way, right? And the real reason I was Ubering was because I was so ashamed. I didn't want to be walking and sweating to the workplace, sweating through my white shirt, you know? I didn't have clothes that fit. I'd wear these tank tops under my shirts and I'd pull them down because the shirts would rise up. I didn't know you could go above 2XL. And I remember I found a Big and Tall store and I literally was crying in the store because I didn't know that they existed and I could wear colors. And then, of course, the clothing was like four times the price of a regular, the same shirt was four times the price. So I did pay a price. I paid a physical price. I paid a literal price. I paid a monetary price. Okay, so that's kind of what it was like. I came into the program, and my perspective changed. For the first year, I really just wanted people to like me, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll meet some cool people that I'll, like, befriend or whatever, or, like, just be friends with, and, like, I don't really know. I didn't see it was possible to lose weight, really. I was in New York City, and there weren't a ton of people that were sharing, "I'm a 100-pounder," you know? They were just, like, I'm sure there were, but they just weren't saying it. I didn't hear it. And I don't know. Maybe they were saying it, and I wasn't hearing the message. And sometimes it's like, I got to be ready to hear the message because it's all here. It's all on the board. It's all the 12 steps. I didn't start working the steps for a year. But what I did was go to meetings. All I did for that first year was go to meetings. I got a couple of sponsors. I ghosted them. You know, I'd get the sponsor and he'd be like, "Yeah, let's start working," and I'd ghost. And what's amazing is like when you start doing it, it kind of works. Like it's like, oh, what a concept. Yeah. You know, but I just want to break down what it means to work the program for people who are new. It just means, the simplest way I can put it is it's a lot of journaling and talking to another person. Like, it's not that scary. I just didn't know what the steps were. Like, I was going to meetings, but I just didn't know what that entailed. And it was like this big, scary concept. And it's like, okay, it's writing and reflecting on my past and reflecting on my behaviors and sharing it with another person who has what I want, right, ideally, and just kind of cleaning up the show, getting cleaner with my behaviors and with my – getting cleaner and clearer on myself as a person. It's really just like – it's not self-help, but it kind of is just develop. It's just growth. It's just growth. So I started, eventually, I needed hope because I just didn't think it was possible. And what I can tell you now on the other side, although it's one day at a time, is like the weight loss, which is the physical manifestation of this, is the smallest thing that's happened. I don't even think about that on a daily basis most of the time. I don't think like, wow, I lost 165 pounds. That's incredible. Like, someone could, like, I could spend every day thinking about that and it would be justified. It's like, oh my God, that's an incredible miracle. But the point is, like, the miracles that have happened are so far beyond that. And I'm not even like, I wasn't a spiritual guy, okay? So if you're coming in and you're like, I don't know what this guy's talking about, it's not like I was like, oh, you know, bring me to church every week. I wasn't, you know? I had a vague sense of a higher power, but it was kind of like I'd bargain and negotiate and I'd be like, please, if I, you know, I messed up, just help me this one time. And then I'd get the solution that I needed and then I'd be like, all right, whatever, moving on, you know? But the miracles are just beyond my wildest dreams. And like, what does that mean? What does it mean for me to experience a miracle? Well, I've heard a miracle is a shift in my thinking. A miracle is a change in my perception, from fear to love, you know? And sometimes it is that, you know, sometimes the miracle is just like, I'm seeing things differently. I'm seeing a situation or a person differently. It's amazing how many times I've been in encounters with people who I absolutely hated, or I just was like, this person sucks. And now what I do when I'm in that situation is I pray for them. And like, is that great? Do I love praying for them? Not always. But what happens is like, I pray for them and I'm like, something changes in my mind. You know, it's like, I don't know what that is. It's a great mystery to me. But it does change, you know. So what happened to me was basically I just started reading that OA 12 and 12 book, you know, and it said, there's no problem too big or too small for my higher power to handle, even food amounts. And I was like, why would God care about my food amounts? That's stupid, you know. Like, there's a lot bigger problems going on and there's world events happening. And I don't know if you've looked at the news recently. And it's like, all that stuff can be true and is true, and there are big world events, and all of that is real. And miracles are 100,000% real. Like, I'm standing before you, and I'm telling you, I've experienced them every day. Like, sometimes small, sometimes big. So I'll pray for the person that I have a grievance with. My opinion will change. I will pray over a situation. It just opens a space for me to see things differently. I would pray in the early days, I would pray and say, help me know how much to eat. Help me know when to stop. Because I love food. And that worked. I would pray that and I would just intuitively know. It says we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I just intuitively know at that point. And in those early days, I was like, well, my food is a lot bigger. I'm having three meals and I'm having two snacks, but I'm still like eating, like, you know, that meal is a big meal and it's like a lot of fat, whatever. And people, no one gave me an answer. They were just like, yeah, just keep going to meetings, keep sharing about it. And just one day at a time, things just continued to, more was constantly revealed. More was constantly revealed. What helped me in the early days was to get a nutritionist. You know, that's, I guess, not really a tool of the program, but it was just, that came from Fellows, right? And it was someone who, I saw her twice. And all she gave me was basic guidelines, which we all already know. But at that point, I was willing to hear it, you know? I was willing to hear, this is what a plate can look like. We know, right? We've been growing up with nutrition education. It's like, okay, there's a quarter plate of carb or a quarter plate of protein. This was just one way of doing it. But for some, and I'd been to a nutritionist before, by the way, I was like, screw you, this sucks, this is so stupid, I can't believe I wasted money to hear a handout that you get from New York State, like, about what's a good plate. She literally gave me a handout, and I was like, this is the biggest waste of money. The next nutritionist told me the same thing, but I was willing to hear it at that point. There's a million different food plans, and there's a million different ways to do this thing. But I heard it, and what she said very simply to me was, you're eating a really small breakfast. I was never a breakfast guy. I was like, breakfast is stupid. You guys are dumb. You don't understand. Like, I want to have a fabulous lunch. Like, who cares about breakfast? And like, oh, breakfast plays a function. It keeps me so that I'm not starving by lunch. What a simple thing. But it never crossed my mind. Until I came to this program, and then the nutritionist said, this is what my mind does, okay? I say, what's a breakfast? I was having a tablespoon of yogurt and a tablespoon of granola. She's like, that's not really a breakfast. It's really small. You need to have this much more for breakfast and this much less for lunch. And like, I did, and she said, I bet if you do that, you won't need a second snack and you won't need this and that. She said, just try it. You have your food program. My food program is, by the way, still three meals and two snacks, two optional snacks. But she was right. when I made those small adjustments from an expert, it was correct. And I wasn't hungry, right? And I'm not saying you have to get a nutritionist. That's just what helped me. So I don't know about food. I don't know. Even when I'm trying my best is a tablespoon of granola because I'm like, that's probably healthy. You know what I mean? Like, it's a handful of this. It's like, okay. So recently, on the same topic, I've had a bit of weight gain. I had, over a period of, let's say, 6 or 7 months, I had gained probably like 15 to 20 pounds over that long. It wasn't like 20 pounds like this. It was just sort of 3 pounds here, then I'd go down 2 pounds, then I'd go up, and then cumulatively over like a little less than a year, that was a 20-pound gain. And I recently had to face that, and it scared me, really scared me. But now I know that that's just a symptom of what's going on inside. It's a symptom. There's something wrong with my inner state, with my mental condition. What's going on with me that I feel the need to eat more? And I get back to basics, you know? After 4 years, I'm still one day at a time. You know, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to meetings. I'm going to do a 30 and 30. That was very helpful. It means 30 meetings in 30 days, and you can cut it up however you want. So you can go to 2 in one day and then not 1 in the next and whatever. That was really helpful for me in early recovery because I just heard lots of different stories. I heard lots of different perspectives and outlooks, and I met lots of different people. And I still do that kind of thing. Like, I'm like, okay, my weight's going up. I got to get into action. It's a program of action. Okay, what else helped me? And then I'll talk about what's going on now. So what helped me was getting on my knees. And I'm a Jew by profession, you know, by trade.
Sure.
Or whatever. And we don't, in the Jewish faith, I was never particularly religious, but it's not, knees aren't a thing, you know? But I got on my knees because someone said it might work. I will take whatever suggestion. I'm like, let's try it. From this program, you know, I'm not going out there, but you know, it's like someone who had what I wanted said I get on my knees every day and I say I surrender, and I'm like, all right, I might as well try. What do I have to lose? And for some reason, when I got on my knees, something shifted in my mind. And if that sounds crazy to you, it is, and yeah. It still worked. Like it worked for me, and. And it's funny because I had a sponsee and I told him about the knees thing and he was like, yeah, I tried that. It didn't really land with me. I'm like, great. That's great. Like, you know, old me would have been like, oh, well, that sucks. But it's like, no, he has his own journey and his own adventure, as it said, personal adventures, right? This is an adventure. And he has his own adventure. And, you know, his conception of a higher power is much different from mine. But whatever you want to call it, universe, God, HP, higher power, the program, the rooms, the people in the rooms, whatever your, however it makes sense to you, literally the slightest, I've heard it will respond to the slightest invitation. You know, it's like I just get on my knees and I say sometimes, hey, I don't know if you're out there, but I really need help today. I'm desperate. Help me, you know? And sometimes I say to people, or what I've tried is, put the F word in your prayer. You know, if you're feeling particularly disconnected, just speak real, get real, you know? And when I get real, you know, universe, God gets real with me too. And I usually get what I need to know or hear at that moment, or I have a shift in my experience. I am willing to see things differently. Great prayer, you know, I'm willing to see things differently. So sometimes I would get on my knees in the middle of the kitchen, and I would just say, help me, I can't, I want to eat, you know? And when I was sharing about the recent weight gain, by the way, this past month I did weigh in again, and I was down 6 pounds. So it felt again, okay, we're back on track. Oh, wow, all right, 10 minutes. We're back on track. So I stay focused on what's my spiritual condition for today. How am I showing up? How is it? How am I doing today, spiritually speaking? Because it's all an inside job for me. It's all an inside job, you know? The food was my solution. And it's never really solved anything for me. It's only given me another It's only given me another problem. What do I want to say in the last 10 minutes here? There's a lot of synchronicity that happens in my life. You know, I go and I'll run into people that I know. I was in New York and I ran into 30 people independently, 30 separate people in different places, on the street, here, you know, not in one place and not in places that I should have been running into them. And that happens to me all the time. That's a regular occurrence. And that's just little nods from the universe, these little nods like, okay, you're in the right place, keep going. Oh, okay, big miracle. So part of my disease was I wasn't able to wake up, you know. I would wake up at 10 o'clock. I told you I was late to work all the time. Forever, even in program. I never really could show up. And I recently finished step 12. So it took me about 3 years to finish the whole steps. I did my four-step resentments. I had like 400. Not just resentments, but fears. The whole thing was about 400, right? Took me a while. Doesn't have to take that long, by the way. You can be done with those steps in whatever, 90 days. Does not have to take that long. It just took me longer. And it shouldn't take that long, probably, but it took what it took. And I couldn't wake up. So I finished step 12, and a number of different things happened. A little suggestion from a person here. Someone said, why don't you try putting your phone across the room? As if I hadn't heard that a million times. But this time, after 30 years of life, and after hearing that suggestion 100 times, I don't know, but I was willing to try it again. And guess what? That worked. And they also said, why don't you try going back to bed at midnight? Try that out. And I was like, well, you don't understand. I'm a night person. I'm a night owl, okay? I do my best work at 3 in the morning. And I was like, okay, I'll take the suggestion. Let's just try it. And I set a goal to get to bed at midnight. And when I go to bed at midnight, I'm way more likely to get up in time. That's my alarm from the morning. You know, when I do the thing that someone suggests that has what I want, it usually kind of works out. And I was like, well, why is it so easy all of a sudden? Why? It's been a problem for my whole life, and now all of a sudden this is suspicious. Like, all of a sudden I'm able to wake up. And I realized step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And that was a moment of awakening, because I'm thinking God's going to come down and shine the light and I'm going to have a hallelujah. I've never had that moment, but I've had a lot of synchronicities which feel that way. But having had a spiritual awakening, I'm like, I'm awake. Literally, I'm awake. You know, I get to wake up today. And for the last 60 days, since October 1st that I started doing that, it's basically a bottom line. I've been waking up before 9 a.m. every day. And I get to bed before midnight every night. And there are nights where I'm in New York and it's a weeknight and I got a party going on, and that's all right. And I take it and I do the party. But it's pretty amazing. You know, it's all inside job. Because what I am capable of when I'm sober and when I'm in these steps and in this program is boundless. It's limitless. I really know that. And I don't say that in a cocky way. It's pretty cool to be able to say that, because 4 years ago I'd be like, I would think I'm the grandiose, I'm God's gift to earth, and I would also think I'm the biggest piece of crap, right? But now I know that I have great potential in me, and it's no more and no less than anyone else has. But I know that I am here for a reason, and I have a lot to offer, and I can be of service. I can help people. I've experienced it. But I have to get out of my own way and out of my higher power's way. You know, I have to be available, radically available. And so sometimes the prayer is, make me available today. May I be useful. Before I go into any room, before I go into a party, I'm a social guy. I'm like not like, I just want to say for those who aren't like, the God thing doesn't connect with them. Like, I'm still out and about. I'm going around, you know. I'm not like in a monastery. I'm out in LA and New York City. I'm there. But... and I have fun, and I have excitement. And sometimes I'm like, well, oh, I kind of slipped with something, or I slipped with this behavior. I wonder if God's going to punish me. And I get to define my own God, and people remind me, we don't have a punishing God today. You know, We have one that loves us. The love is so great, I cannot possibly comprehend it. And if you're not there right now, doesn't matter. It's like, even if you don't believe or whatever, I asked for help and I got it. I don't know how that works. I was desperate beyond. I did not see a way out. I was miserable at 340 pounds. I'd stay asleep until 2 in the afternoon, and I'd wake up hungover from eating a whole pizza the night before. And now I'm happy, joyous, and free for the most part. I still have problems. I have 5 minutes, and it's great to share this story. Mm-hmm. So I went out to, I was getting this honor, and I had to purchase an outfit for this. And a friend of mine who's a stylist said, why don't you go from to this store, buy this, and you can return it. And that's what we do as stylists every day, and I've never had an issue with this. And I bought this outfit, and it was several thousand dollars worth of an outfit. And another person told me the same thing. You're not going to have an issue. It's all good. I go into the store today, and I bring that outfit, and the guy is returning, and the return is basically done. And the woman who sold me the outfit comes up. She happens to walk in at that moment, and she says, I saw you in a photo with that outfit. You wore it. Accusatory. You wore it. And I was like, what? And she goes off. She said, I'm going to bring my manager. You'll talk. She looks up my name. I don't know. But I didn't see a photo. But there are photos of me in this outfit. But I didn't think I was necessarily doing anything super dishonest, right? This is what the stylist said. Yeah, it's a bit hustler. It's a bit of a thing. But, you know, he does it for his clients. He's a big, big, you know, well-known and well-respected, well-regarded stylist. So she comes back, and long story short, they did not return this outfit. And it's several thousand. It's a lot of money. A lot of money. And I was trembling, shaking. I was like, what am I going to do? This is several months of rent. And I'm like, is my higher power going to punish me because I acted out with something, with some behavior? And, you know, oh, I've got to learn the spiritual lesson here. I just called a fellow, and, you know, he's like, yeah, there's a lesson, but, you know, you'll get through it. It'll be okay, you know? And that's the perspective shift, right? Because before I'd be like, well, I'm going to email them, and I'm going to say that they were discriminatory, whatever, right? Whatever crazy thing I would go to. Now, yes, I did get very upset. Yes, I did shake and tremble, and I'm afraid because that's a lot of money that I don't necessarily have. But I just guess I, you know, and I'm telling you now, I don't know what's going to happen with that. But I know that there is a higher power for sure. And telling you reaffirms that for me. And I'm like, I'm going to be okay. I might have to eat that money, and that'll be an expensive lesson. Or a miracle can occur, right? And I choose to believe that things are going to go well. Because in the past, I believed that they're not going to go well. And that wasn't helping me. Because I believed it was completely impossible for me to lose 5 pounds. You know, I believed that was impossible. And that belief just was not, what is that? How does that help me? So I'm willing to see things differently means maybe it can. I don't know how. I have no clue how. But maybe there's a way. Maybe there's a way. So I guess I can take one question maybe. If someone has one question. Go for it, Lucy.
Thank you so much. Talk a little bit about how all your recovery has impacted your relationship with your family.
How has my recovery impacted my relationship with my family? It's a work in progress. My mother was, we were really butting heads a lot. And I felt so much shame because she's fabulous and she's wonderful and everyone loves my mother. And I was like, well, yeah, but you don't have to live with her, you know? But I knew that there was real special thing about her, but I just couldn't access it. And I felt so much guilt and shame, like, why can't I see the joy in my mother? You know, why do I hate her so much? Why do I hate her so much in those teenage years and in those college years? I just really was so bitter and resentful towards her. And how has it changed? How has it changed is that now I have a very positive relationship with her. I don't, I would, oh, I'll just say quickly, I'm at my time. But I used to, she would say something and it would be the most mild thing. She'd be like, can you just fix this thing on your, Mom, okay, I get it, okay? Stop. Okay, that was me. I was reactive. And I was so ashamed that I did that. I was like, oh my God, I'm a terrible person. I can't believe this. I'd go off on my own. And I say, higher power, God, can you remove that from me? Is that possible? I don't know. Seems like a really lifelong thing. Is it possible for you to remove it? And it gets removed. And I did a project about my mother, an art project. And she came to every single performance of that project. Every day she drove to Orange County, 4 hours back and forth, 2 hours there, 2 hours back. And that's healing, you know? That's a miracle beyond. So miracles are possible. They're really real. And this stuff really works. You just got to take one small step, you know? Easy does it. It means easy accomplishes it. Easy gets it done. You know, I'm looking at these signs one day at a time. It's just one day. It's just for today. What can I do today to be of service, to be helpful? What can I do today to stay sober? What am I willing to do? Can I share my food with someone else? Can I write to someone? Can I contact someone? What am I willing to do for today? I haven't had fast food in 4 years. Haven't had certain foods. I've had many foods in 4 years. I've had all kinds. But there are certain, I never thought it was possible to not have fast food. So, again, miracles beyond. And I'm grateful for this program. I'm grateful to be alive and to get to share this with you. To have a joy and a thirst and a longing to live. I want to live today. I didn't really want to live. I didn't want to die, but I didn't know how I could live, you know? And now I get to just be one among many. So thank you so much.
A suggested donation of $3 or more is approved.